Let me join with Tom and say thank you so much for being here. If you are part of our family here, we're grateful. And if you're new to our family or new to our community and you are coming to see us and check us out, thank you for being part. And if you have any questions, we are always here to answer whatever you need. So thank you for worshiping with us. I have a friend who has five children. And they all kind of stair-step. And he's got two twins that are a year younger than Jonah and then one boy that is a year older than Jonah. And so we've had numerous conversations over the lifetime of our children. And he has always jokingly, I hope jokingly, called me the 20% dad. Because he would say, when you're on a Saturday, I'm trying to get two girls in soccer and two boys playing baseball, and the one who's older than that's calling me on the phone asking for money while he's in college. You have one child. You got it made. What kind of dad are you? And then he says, and you've never had to separate a fight at the dinner table or in the middle of the living room or in the backyard, because if Jonah were to start fighting with somebody in the living room, you would take him for counseling because there's nobody there. And you really don't count. Now, he was joking because we had a lot of, or at least I think he was joking. I'm going to take it as he was joking. We had a lot of good conversations about our kids and parenting and leading them and growing them in the way they should go. But he had a valid point. I didn't have to do much peacekeeping in our house. I didn't have to start when Jonah was a little boy saying, you share your toy with your brother or your sister, like most of you have had to do. I didn't have to break up the fight in the backyard over who gets the last gummy bear. I didn't have to do all those things that you do as a parent with multiple kids. So I know that peacemaking in your house can sometimes be kind of fun. Because along with peacemaking, we got troublemakers, right? My guess is you may have one or two or three children in your family that are a little bit of troublemakers every now and then. And they stir the pot. And parents are called to make peace. I think in a very real sense, as we have heard from not only Tom and from Jesse, I think we are called to be peacemakers. That in the midst of a world that has got some troublemaking that comes pretty easy, we are for peace. And we are for peace in principle, but peace in practice can sometimes be difficult. I wished I could say that every marriage in this room was a peaceful marriage. But my guess is they're not. And I wish I could say every relationship between siblings was a peaceful relationship, but it's probably not. And I wish I could say every relationship we have with people above us or people below us on the ladder in our jobs, that we have peaceful relationships. And my guess is the answer to that would be there's some of those that aren't. And we could talk about neighborhoods, and we could talk about community, and we could talk about 100 different levels where there seems to be peace, but not necessarily in practice. We'd love it, but it's not there. So Jesus, talking to an audience of normal people, calls them out to be peacemakers. Notice again what he says, blessed are the peacemakers, and then there's the reward that comes to them, for they shall be called sons of God. That's an interesting word, peacemaker. It's the desire, and I think if we're going to be ruled by the heart of God, all of us, you're going to hear me say this over and over, all of us are called to be peacemakers. Not just peacemakers in our marriages and in our families and in our jobs, but we are called to be peacemakers as those who desire reconciliation, who want to see those two sides that are opposed, those two sides that are apart, be brought back together. And it's a powerful concept. And it's a concept I think really matters to the church. What we notice in the book of Acts is the book of Acts doesn't exalt fighters. It exalts fixers. That when they start talking about the heroes of the faith, in the Peters and the Pauls and the Stephens and the Phillips and all the other characters that appear in the book of Acts, they all come into the world where they are not to fight it, but to fix it. And I think we are called for the same thing. That our role is not to step out into the world, and some of you may disagree with me, but our role is not to step out into the world and say, you guys are a bunch of crazy people. And you're a bunch of people who are angry and mad and bitter, and you all just do your stuff and get out of here. We got something, and we're going to keep what we got to ourselves. The call for the peacemaker is to go out in the midst of that angry world, in the midst of that world that is bound up in sin, in the midst of that world that is broken, and say, here is where God is, and here is what reconciliation means. See, we live in a world of the disposable relationship. I've been listening to a book that is called The Anxious Generation, and I'm still mad at Emily Cometti for telling me to read this book, but it's basically a book about the generation of my child, this generation that was kind of COVID and that's now college and kind of coming out of college, and it seems to be they've kind of labeled it as this generation that is just anxious, and they jump from place to place to place, and they hop to this and hop to this, and everything is disposable. And I'm not sure it's just that generation where things are disposable. Phones are disposable, and TVs are disposable, and laptops are disposable. Now, you don't fix anything. You throw it in the trash, and you buy something new. And relationships have become disposable. And friendships have become disposable. And jobs have become disposable. And as you work into it, you go from relationships to then it's even parents are disposable, bosses are disposable, and sometimes even our spouse is disposable. And that's the world we live in. We live in a world where it's pretty easy to throw it away and get something new. And that is not the call for peace. Jesus doesn't say, blessed are the peace lovers, because Jesus knows that God sees a fractured world. He says, blessed are the peacemakers who are going to do their best to reconcile a fractured world with a God who loves them immensely. Okay, one of my favorite passages, and you've heard me kind of quote the back half of this, I would guess 100 times, but it's from 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And in the midst of the end of that chapter, Paul is going to talk about how we're ambassadors for Christ and we've got this duty of reconciliation. And here's kind of where we pick it up, right toward the end. He says, all of this is from God, who through Christ reconciled us to himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. And then he's going to go on in verse 21 to talk about he who had no sin became sin for us, that we might become the children of God. So what's powerful in the midst of that is Paul is looking out at the people of Corinth and he's saying, we are the ones who not only have been saved by the righteousness of Jesus, but we are then the ones who take what has saved us and brought us next and side by side with God, and we are the ones who go out to the world to say, you have the same thing. And what peacemaking does is it restores relationship. It takes relationship that has been severed and it brings them back together. We don't use this term anymore, I don't think, but you reconcile a checkbook, and you know what that means, right? You take the bank statement out and you make sure all the deposits that you made are in your checkbook and all the debits are in your checkbook as well, and you reconcile that. You make sure that the bottom line that says you have $12.58 left is the same as what the bank thinks you have left, because if you don't, the bank's going to get you. Because the banks aren't very nice. Banks aren't very nice sometimes if you only keep $12.58 in your bank. You reconcile it. You're lining it up to make sure it's in order. But what we do is far greater than making sure the $12.98 lines up with the bank. We're making sure the life that we live lines up with the God that we serve. And so our job is a ministry of reconciliation. And so when God talks about the peace-ruled heart and the God-ruled heart, he wants us to realize that part of our role as his people in this world is to bring people to him and to bring people together. I have a preaching friend who doesn't like to be called a preacher. He doesn't want to be called a minister or a pastor or a father or anything. He wants to be called the reconciler. Now, we all think he wants to be called the reconciler because he's about 6'3", and he's built like a linebacker, and he's kind of intimidating, and he's the reconciler, like you would see on a law firm commercial. But he wants to be called the reconciler, I think jokingly, because that's his job. That his job is to look at his church and say, we got a marriage that is in chaos. How can we bring peace? And we've got a friendship that is in tatters. How can we bring peace? And we've got a relationship between God and people. How can we bring peace? And we've got a relationship between parents and children and parents. And a God-ruled heart wants to see people brought to God and brought back to each other. And that ought to be in every single preacher's job description in the entire world. The reconciler. So from now on, I want you to call me that. Because a God-ruled heart knows those things matter. Your relationship with God matters. And your relationship with each other matters. And your relationship within your family matters. And within your workplace matters. And within your neighborhood and your community, it matters. And we've got to see that blessed are the peacemakers, for they will see God matters. Okay, so we've got to have a God-ruled heart. So how do we get there? First, let's take a negative side for just a second. A God-ruled heart knows that peace is never unconditional. Okay, let me explain that. If you think peace is unconditional, then you're confusing peace with appeasement. Okay, let me demonstrate the difference between peace and appeasement. You are in the grocery store with your four-year-old, and you are about to check out, and your four-year-old sees all of the candy bars right there to the right and says, "Mom, Dad, whoever, I want one." And you say no, and they throw a holy hissy fit, and you grab a Reese's Pieces, and you put it in their hand. You have not reconciled. You have appeased. Okay, now I'm not throwing you under the bus for appeasing. I have appeased many times. I've appeased some of your kids every now and then. Thomas Beard appeases your children with donuts every Sunday. But appeasement and peace are not the same thing. Jesus wasn't advocating cheap peace and appeasement. In fact, often he was the source of disturbing it. I mean, look at this passage from Matthew chapter 10. So this is maybe a year after he's preached the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I've not come to bring peace, but a sword." Now, we know that he's speaking figuratively. "For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household." So it's like Jesus is coming in saying, "I'm not just here to appease the people. I'm not giving them the Reese's Pieces to quiet them down so they don't embarrass me in the store. I want to bring peace, but peace has got to be conditional." Because one writer said this, "Even the Prince of Peace," which Jesus is called from the Old Testament, "even the Prince of Peace didn't get along with everybody." And so there are going to be moments when peace doesn't come. But also, peace is not just the absence of conflict. It's the presence of righteousness. So sometimes we think there is peace. Like somebody said, maybe someday there'll be peace in the Middle East. Okay, I'm not a prophet, and I don't know anything about world politics for the most part, but I'm gonna tell you something. There's probably never going to be peace in the Middle East. I'm just going to be honest. From the beginning of time, there has been chaos in the Middle East, and my guess is until Jesus comes back and says, "Let's call an end and let's start something new," there's probably going to be chaos there. There may be an absence of conflict. In your marriage, there may be an absence of conflict. You may have a husband and wife who don't speak to each other for days. There is no conflict, but that doesn't mean there's peace. See, peacemaking is not just the absence of people going at it. It's taking that and filling something else in there. And as long as there is sin and it's being condoned, there's not going to be real peace. And so if you're in a relationship where sin is going on, it's hard to bring peace into that relationship or peace into that friendship or whatever is going on until something is taken care of. Notice just a couple of verses. First, James chapter 3 reads like this, "But the wisdom from above is first pure and then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness," notice that word connected to it, "a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make it." A harvest. So the goal is not just the absence of conflict. I think James is saying the goal is this absence, or this presence is maybe a better way to say it, not just the absence of conflict, but the presence of righteousness. The writer of Hebrews would say this, in chapter 12, he would say, "Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. Okay, I don't know if whoever wrote Hebrews has got the Beatitudes in his head, but remember how the Beatitude went? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God. Strive for peace with everyone, the writer says. That doesn't mean, if you're striving for it, that doesn't mean you always get it. The writer's saying, strive for peace with everyone, and this holiness matters. Or think of what David said, or the psalmist, whoever wrote Psalm 85. He writes this, steadfast love and faithfulness meet, righteousness and peace kiss each other. Those two go hand in hand. There can be no peace when sin is involved. There can be no peace in the midst of that chaos where whoever is in the midst of it is trying to live some life that they are determined they're going to live on their own, no matter or who cares what anybody else says. But peace can come the moment they start to see they've got to get rid of that. But let's be honest. Most of our relational problems are not about sin. Okay, most of our relational problems in our families, in our workplaces, and I hate to say this, but in our church house, are not about sin. They're about petty matters of preference and opinion that are fueled by pride and self-will. Okay, so I can understand when I get a father who comes to me and says, I can't be reconciled to my child because my child is strung out on drugs and I know him and I love him and I'm doing everything I can to get him to go the right direction, but there's got to be some conflict there until we get this sorted out. That's one thing. But it's another thing when someone on this side of the room looks at someone on this side of the room and says, I don't like you because of, and they fill in a blank that had nothing to do with sin and had everything to do with pride. And my friends, I want to tell you, if that's what's going on in the life of our church, and I don't think it goes off on very often, but we ought to try to see peacemaking because it matters. So the second thing is peace is always intentional. Okay, peace doesn't just fall in your lap. Romans 12 reads like this, if it's possible, notice that line, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Okay, I want that to be your goal. As far as you can take it. If it's possible, live at peace with everyone. I think what that means is you've got to be willing to go as far as you can, even if you didn't start the war. Okay, maybe it's the war in your marriage. That's not based on sin and struggle and trouble. It's based on silly things. Maybe it's the war within your workplace. Maybe it's the war, proverbially, that sometimes goes on in the life of the church. You be willing to go as far as you can, even if you didn't start it. Because I think that matters. Jesus would say this later on in the Sermon on the Mount. He would say in chapter 5, verse 23, if you're offering your gift at the altar and then remember that your brother has something against you, notice what he says, you leave your gift at the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Okay, one of the things that disturbs me is I see a growing trend, unfortunately, among God's people, to avoid resolving interpersonal disputes. And in big churches, it happens more than in small churches. If you're in a 20-member church, you can't have person A not liking person B, or that 20-member church is going to be a mess. In a 250-member church, you can have person A that doesn't like person B, and they can go a long time without even addressing them. And I think we need to be careful. Because what we've done in the midst of that is we have learned to bring our gift to the altar anyway. We've learned to walk in the doors and sing how great Jehovah is. And we've learned to walk in the doors and listen to the preacher. And we've learned to walk in the doors and take communion and contribute to the needs of those around us. And we've learned to pray and say amen. And we've learned to do a whole bunch of other stuff. And for years, there's been ruptured relationships. And I think we're missing something. And if you're in the midst of a ruptured relationship, I don't care if you started it or not, I want you to remember one thing. God made a move toward you. Okay, Jesse talked about how there was a point all of us are enemies because of our sin. That all of us are enemies to God because of our sin. And what God does is God chooses to make the move to reconcile. He doesn't say, okay, you guys get it all figured out and then come to me. He says, let me start the process. If there is a relationship that you have that is severed, that is ruptured, that is hanging by a thread, make a move. Make a phone call, write a letter. I don't know the best way to tell you because I don't know the situation, but find a way to make a move and say, as hard as possible, let's get along with everybody. Even if you didn't start the war. Okay. It's going to lead into another sermon in a few weeks. But do you want God to make peace with you the way you've made peace with your enemies? Okay, think about that for a second. The person who sketched the line and got the promotion ahead of you, even though they didn't work as hard, nor did they deserve it. The person who looked at your child and said, that is the ugliest baby I've ever seen. The person who dented the car. The person who cut you off in traffic. The person who shorted you $10. The person you loaned the drill to and you can go by their house and see it hanging in their garage. The person who hurt your feelings. The person who made a mistake. The person who maybe even sinned against you. Do you want God to make peace with you the way you've made peace? Okay, that's a hard question. Because there are probably some grudges I've got. And there are some probably things in the back of my head. And I'll be honest, there are moments I'm walking around and I see and remember. Because unfortunately, my brain doesn't forget stuff. Well, I mean, it forgets stuff, but not important stuff. My brain doesn't forget stuff that's been done to me. And I think, well, that's the person who said that. And that's the person who did that to so-and-so. And that's the person who ripped off that family. And that, and that, and that. And do I want God to make peace with me the way I've made peace with them? Okay, so I want a God-ruled heart. And so that means I need to resemble the character of God. And that may mean I need to make a phone call. And that may mean I need to set up a time to have a cup of coffee. And that may mean, and maybe they are not receptive. And maybe they want nothing to do with reconciliation. Remember what Paul said, if possible. But at least we have made the effort. Because I want a God-ruled heart. When he gets to the end, the reward, so to speak, of that beatitude, they shall see God, or they shall know God, and they will be called sons of God. Let me get it right in my head. I've probably said it wrong half a dozen times now. If you're a peacemaker, you're going to be called a son of God or a daughter of God. Okay, let me give you a little Hebrew for a second. I don't want to bore you with a Hebrew lesson, but when you say son of in Hebrew, it means you are of the nature of. Okay, for instance, Jonah is the son of Doug, which is seen if you look at me when I was 20. I had lots of brown hair. Jonah has lots of brown hair. If you look at Nikki when she was 20, she was tall with long arms and not brown hair. But you could see that's the son of. It's pretty easy to see that. It's the nature. Okay, we are sons of God. That means we partake in his nature. And if his nature is one of reconciliation, and if his nature is one of peace, then we ought to have that same thing. I was watching the news just a couple of days ago talking about two different wars. In 5 minutes they covered Israel and Palestine, and they covered Russia and Ukraine. And the one girl who was kind of running the conversation says, wouldn't it be nice if we just give peace a chance? I want to say to you, in the midst of your families, in the midst of your work relationships, in the midst of the argument with the neighbor over who's going to fix the fence, In the midst of those moments when bad stuff has been done to you and there needs to be forgiveness brought into it, are you going to give peace a chance? Because I think, no, I don't think. Here's what I know. I know giving peace a chance reflects the character of God. When I was I probably was 6th or 7th grade, we lived in a suburb of Salt Lake City, and we had some freak windstorm that took the shed that was in our backyard and grabbed it and moved it off of its little pad and into the fence and then over into some other buddy's yard. And I remember the conversation that went on between my dad and the owner of that other house, because we were all kind of standing in the back saying, what's going to happen here? That neighbor, he's not very nice, and he's going to be mad that it was our shed that wiped out his fence, even though it wasn't my dad's hot air that blew the shed away, it was the wind. Sorry, my dad's going to hear that. Maddie, can you edit that part out during this week? When are we going to take the fence down and make peace? Okay. What happened is, in the discussion over what to do about that fence, my dad said it was our shed that hit that fence. We'll take care of it. Those two, as far as I know, got along from that day on. Taking the fence down to bring peace. Maybe you need to knock a fence down. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it doesn't take a while. I'm not saying you don't do it brick by brick. But maybe you need to knock a fence down. We don't know this song, and so I didn't ask Kent to lead it, because I hate giving a song to song leaders that we don't know very well. But there's a song called Lord, Make Us Instruments of Your Peace. Where there is hatred, let your love increase. The whole idea of the song is this: use us to look like you. To bring peace to a ruptured world, to bring peace to ruptured families, to bring peace to sometimes, and I hope it's never us, but peace to a ruptured church. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Because we are sons and daughters of God. So maybe there's something you need to fix. Maybe there's a move you need to make. Maybe you need to be receptive to a move somebody else is going to make. I want you to think of those words. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. In one of our classes a few weeks ago, someone said, wouldn't it be cool if we all just lived on an island and we were separated from the world? And I thought that would be kind of nice. But you know what? It probably wouldn't take us but 3 or 4 weeks and we'd start fussing with each other. And that island wouldn't be some paradise of church. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Okay, if you need me, if you need the elders, I'll be here at the front. Elders are at every door as you go. If you need some help bringing some reconciliation to a relationship, to a friendship, to a relationship within this church, find us. And maybe you need the ultimate reconciliation that matters more than anything, and that is with God. And you're ready to start a walk with Him and to be baptized and to begin that journey. We'd be privileged to share in that with you. Or maybe you've wandered off course a little bit and you need to get right back with Him. Let us know. We'll help you any way we can. So if you need something, let's stand as we sing. Okay?